and welcome to a CS50 seminar on customizing Cloud9 and the CS50 IDE. So today we're going to just talk a little bit about some of the technical information that goes behind the architecture of Cloud9 and how we have implemented some of the plugins as part of Cloud9 to provide CS50 IDE. So let's just jump right in and start talking about plugins. So plugins are really at the core of the Cloud9 experience. Cloud9 is the underlying technology that provides to us the IDE and also the terminal window at the bottom, along with the workspace, the Ubuntu workspace that we use to compile all of our projects and perform our problem sets, complete our problem sets. But at the heart of all of it, all of the technology is really just a bunch of plugins. Everything is a plugin that can be modified, extended. You can create your own plugins. You can remove other plugins to really alter quite a lot of the functionality of the existing Cloud9 IDE. So this is an existing Cloud9 environment. This is really just the default Cloud9 environment. And take a look at how it actually is different from the CS50 IDE. So this is the CS50 IDE. Notice that there are some visual changes between the regular Cloud9 environment and the CS50 IDE. Specifically, you'll notice a couple of changes. First of all, there's fewer menu items to begin with. There's actually a way that you can change that. It's called simple mode. By default, simple mode is enabled, and that simplifies some of the menu items. It removes some of the more advanced ones, because frankly, a lot of students that are coming in and don't need to know about some of the more advanced features are not overwhelmed with a bunch of options, but we do provide the ability to take off those so-called training wheels and remove that scaffolding so that people can become more accustomed to the advanced features of the IDE. Immediately to the right of that, there's also a debug button, which in the standard Cloud9 environment is simply called run. But by default, we have configured the debug button in the CS50 IDE to bring up the debugger, automatically compile the source code, connect the debugger to the underlying GDB instance that's running to perform the debugging, and some other steps as well. Also, the terminal window at the very, or rather the terminal tab at the console section of the window at the very bottom of the screen was renamed to simply be terminal, whereas in the standard Cloud9 environment, it actually shows the running application. This way, it simplifies, again, the GUI just a little bit. We also added some buttons to the upper right of the IDE to show some basic information about the underlying instance. And also, we have removed one of the options on the items from the far right. So all of this is implemented not by modifying necessarily the Cloud9 source code, but instead through a couple of plugins that we have implemented throughout the past year or so, and Cloud9 has hosted and is running in the CS50 workspaces, or rather in the workspaces that are designated as CS50 IDEs. So really, that's the main difference between Cloud9 and the CS50 workspaces. There's also, in the underlying instance, the primary change is that we install some pre-configured items like GDB and some other basic things that we've created, like Update 50 and a couple of other steps that make the whole experience a little bit more unified. But overall, this is just a modification of an existing system that Cloud9 has created for us. What we're going to show a little bit later is how to actually create a somewhat basic plugin that allows us to insert something into the menu system and open up a dialog. And if we have enough time, we'll actually see how that we can populate that dialog with some information from the underlying instance. But in order for us to get to that point, let's first talk a little bit about the architecture of Cloud9. So the way that we are used to interacting with Cloud9 is entirely through the client. We open up a web browser, we type in the cs50.io, we eventually, after authentication, are presented with the IDE, but realize that there's a couple of steps that actually get us to this point. The very first thing is that my client, the web browser, upon request and after authentication, loads the GUI and the plugins from some CDN, from some content delivery network. This can be, frankly, anywhere. And this is actually separate from the underlying instance. It's important to realize that this is actually just a bunch of static files. It's a bunch of JavaScript that is downloaded from the CDN onto my web browser. And all of the GUI that you see here, this is really key, all of the GUI that you see here is run on the client side. Everything that you see in the Cloud9 workspace is actually run in the browser. And anything that you send along to the underlying instance is communicated with the instance along this second separate channel, and is then saved onto that Docker instance. So the reason that I'm saying that this is a Docker instance is that the underlying technology is not using virtual machines, but instead is using a technology called Docker, which basically allows, the closest analogy is a virtual machine, but it is subtly different in that it is there are plenty of opportunities to run a combination of different Docker instances on a single machine, and they can be spun up in very rapid succession. It is not quite the more strict differentiation between different Docker instances as there are in virtual machines, but still there's a lot of differentiation and separation between these different instances. Okay, so the two steps here that are important to realize is that when we go to cs50.io, we are downloading the GUI and the plugins, which are written in JavaScript, onto the browser, or into the browser, and this is maybe a couple megabytes worth of information. At that point, once the GUI has loaded and the plugins have started, then it begins to communicate with the Docker instance, which doesn't necessarily have to be the same server. Now, there is one exception to this. We can actually have both the delivery mechanism for the GUI itself and the Docker instance in all of the same server, which is actually something that we do for the offline version of Cloud9. This is not something that we've publicized very much this fall, but we do also have an offline version that allows you to download, a packaged version of all of these things and allow you to run Cloud9 in an offline environment. Moving this off the cloud and onto your local machine has some impact. In particular, you no longer have the ability to share your workspace with others. You no longer can open Cloud9 from and the CS50 IDE from any computer and see the same files that you were working with before. But instead, it works totally on your own local machine without needing access to the internet. But still, even in that model, even though we have one virtual machine that is essentially running these things, we have a separate server that is delivering essentially the Cloud9 content, and then we have one, we have a Docker instance that is responsible for communicating with that IDE for the back end. Okay, so the entire GUI is written entirely in JavaScript using Node.js and the Cloud9 SDK, which we'll get to in just a minute. And all of the plugins are run on the client side. So let's focus then a little bit by assuming that this first step has actually completed successfully and look only at this Docker instance. So in this case, this is the standard way of thinking about doing Cloud9 plugin development, is that you are going to be writing code that will be run in the user's browser, and you have the opportunity using some APIs to communicate with the underlying Docker instance, run some code there, and do anything that you might want to do. So this is going to be the context that that we'll be using for the rest of this talk, and just keep this model in mind. This will be very important in just a few minutes. There's a couple of links that I want to show you. First of all, Cloud9 has provided quite a lot of documentation that's pretty good that shows how to do basic plugin development. So if you go to this URL, cloud9-sdk.readme.io, you'll see the documentation there. And a lot of this information that you're about to see can also be found there, plus more. You can also find the open source version of Cloud9 at this URL, github.com/c9/core, which we use is as part of the offline version of the IDE, so that you will be able to have the same Cloud9 experience, but in an offline way. All right, so let's take a look at an actual Cloud9 workspace here. And again, I want to point out a couple of things, that this is right here a normal CS50 IDE, and I have disabled less comfortable mode under the view menu so that I can see all of the menu options. What I want to show you right now is a couple of things. First of all, if I go into the preferences and then click on Plugin Manager and type in CS50 here, we can see that there are, in fact, a couple of CS50 plugins that were installed and are running to enable the modifications that we've seen for the CS50 IDE. Right now, there's essentially two plugins that are running. There's one called Simple, which is the simplified mode that allows you to reduce the number of menu options along the top and have this so-called less comfortable mode. And then there's also CS50 Stats, which is maybe only slightly misnamed, because this is what shows you the information about the underlying workspace. It injects these buttons along the top right. It also injects a menu item into the window item, into the window menu right here, CS50 IDE Info, and is responsible for instantiating this dialogue that we've seen here with all of the information that we're accustomed to seeing in a CS50 IDE workspace. Okay, so there's actually one more plugin that we have developed as well, and there's a couple of others that we also haven't publicly released, but one of them is the overall plugin that allows GDB to function. So one of the aspects of Cloud9 is that they have provided already this GUI to implement a debugger, and one of the plugins that we have created basically hooks GDB with this GUI-based version of a debugger, and is responsible for mediating all of the requests that a user might have between stepping over or creating breakpoints or anything along those lines, to translating that to commands that GDB can understand, issuing those commands to GDB, and as soon as GDB issues a response, then we interpret that and update the GUI as necessary. That is probably one of the more complicated of the plugins, so instead what we're going to focus on today is in fact the stats plugin, and we'll talk a little bit about Simple as well. So I mentioned before, and I really want to make very clear that, again, all of this that we're seeing here is essentially operating on the client side. We do see a terminal window below, and that, of course, if we type in commands into that, that will be then issued to the underlying instance. Similarly, if we open a new file and type some stuff into it and save it, that file will be saved on the underlying instance. But the editor itself, this terminal window itself, is all implemented in JavaScript and is all a plugin that we can interact with and therefore modify. There's a lot of extensibility here. I recommend taking a look at Cloud9's GitHub account to see the vast quantity of plugins that are available and just how well written a lot of the code is for extensibility. So there's something that I want to mention about this as well, which is that there are a lot of there's a lot of functionality that's provided in the preferences window, which we've seen just alluded to just a few minutes ago. One of the things that we can do as IDE developers or as Cloud9 developers is to actually inject some preference panels of our own. So the simple mode or the less comfortable mode, and also the IDE information or the stats plugin has each some preference panels that allow us to modify the behavior of each of those. You'll notice that if I go to the preferences and go to user settings, there's a CS50 tab, one that says IDE information, and I can change the information refresh rate. Effectively, what's happening in the stats plugin is that every n seconds, where n seconds is defined by this preference panel, information is being fetched from the underlying instance, being sent back to the client side. The plugin is then interpreting the information from the underlying instance and updating the GUI as necessary. We can see that right now this is set to 30 seconds and that's the default, but I can definitely change how quickly this happens just by modifying this value. Now, one of the interesting things is that this preference panel GUI is really just a GUI version of a lot of underlying settings that are presented in JSON. So if I go, for example, under the CS50 IDE menu or the Cloud9 menu, depending on which version you're looking at, and go to one of these settings, in this case, the project settings in this case applies to all of the settings for this one workspace, whereas user settings apply to all of the workspaces that you might have in your account. So just as an aside here, to be extra clear, there's a separation between the two because although by default we have one workspace, which is the CS50 IDE, if you were to click on your little avatar up here and go to dashboard, you'll find that you can actually create additional workspaces as well. You can see here that I do have an IDE 50 workspace, and also for the purposes of this seminar, a workspace called workspace, which is right here. So anyway, I have different preferences. Each one of these might have separate project preferences, but the user preferences are shared amongst all my workspaces. By the way, this is also very handy if you want to create a workspace with different customization options, and it's very handy to create a new workspace and choose one that might be pre-configured in some other way, perhaps for PHP specifically or Django specifically, or even just custom. The CS50 workspace template is the one that we use that automatically installs update 50 and all of the settings that we have there, including all of the plugins that we have for the CS50 IDE. Okay, but let's come back to this. So again, there were project settings, and that's the one. Those are the ones that we are looking at here. And notice that there are a bunch of settings. Many of them correspond to preference panels, but not all of them. But we can see that here in this. Did I put it in the user settings? Perhaps I put it in the user settings. In this, here we go. In the user settings, we can see that we have a CS50 section. And this is being written to by these Cloud9 plugins that we've implemented. There's the simple one to correspond with that simple plugin, and the stats one, which corresponds to that GUI-based version of the preference panel. The refresh rate in this case is set to 20 seconds. This is all hopefully the beginnings of some information that we'll actually see in a little bit more detail momentarily. Okay, so let's say we want to actually get down to it. We understand that all of this stuff that's happening on the client side is done actually on the browser, which means that any plugins that I write are going to be written for with the browser in mind. And if I actually want to do anything on the workspace, I will perhaps have to initiate some sort of communication between the browser and the workspace to be sure that that is actually accomplished. But let's say that now I want to get down to it and actually create my first plugin. Well, the way that you would be able to do that is actually pretty easy. It's given in the Cloud9 SDK, but it's to take your existing workspace name, which is the URL that you have at the top of your bar, and add the following to it. *SDK=1 and debug=2. Now, what this is going to enable is that the SDK=1 will actually set the SDK mode to true, which will enable a couple of additional things. And debug=2 will allow error messages to be a little bit more verbose. And so if you bring up the JavaScript console in your Chrome developer tab, you will actually be able to see a lot more information than you would otherwise. So I recommend turning both of these on at the same time, because it really is useful to have all of this additional information. It is important to note, however, that turning on debug to a value of 2 means that it's very verbose, and it actually will somewhat noticeably slow down your IDE, especially when loading or when doing heavy tasks. So just keep that in mind. It's useful for development, but you may not want to have it on all of the time. So let's actually do that. But in this case, I actually have already set up a workspace with this, so let's see, SDK=1 and debug=2, with a couple of plugins hopefully already installed. All right, so let's, now that I've turned on the SDK debug mode, notice that we are in debug mode. We can look at the dev tools to see any errors, which I will do off screen. We can see that there's a bunch of errors here. Now, it's actually pretty common for Cloud9 to have a couple of errors, and I wouldn't worry about them until you see something that might be specific to the plugin that you happen to be creating. So here, for example, we get a couple of 404s not found. We see we're unable to load some information off the underlying instance itself. And there's a bunch of additional information, but most of this we're actually going to ignore for now, because this is pretty common for a workspace to have just a couple of errors. OK, I'm going to move this out of the way and come back here. And now the easy way, the nice thing about having this developer mode enabled is that it allows me to easily create a new plugin. So whereas before, I actually did not have this new plugin option available, which we can see if I go back to my non-developer mode over here, there's no new plugin. By enabling the SDK mode, I have a new plugin available, and I can easily create one. In this case, there's a couple of different options, simple, an empty plugin, full plugin, installer, Cloud9 bundle. Let's just choose an empty plugin for now so that we can see a very simple version of one. Now notice that along the left side, that there is now something under favorites, which is listing a couple of plugins that are now available to me. If I expand that, we will be able to see those. Now, I want you to notice something here, which is that this is not actually contained within the workspace directory on my underlying Ubuntu instance, but it is contained on the hard drive. And where this is located, because this is very useful to know, especially if you're going to be doing anything with Git, where this is located is in a .c9 folder / plugins. So if I go there, we can see that now the list of plugins that are here matches the list of plugins that I saw on the left side of my workspace. Now, by default, and this is kind of strange, by default, when I create a new plugin in a workspace, it creates this plugin that by default has a name of an underscore. Generally, that might cause some problems. So the very next step that I usually perform is just to remove that particular plugin and leave only the simple plugin that was there initially, plugin.simple. And that's the only one that's there. OK, so what does this actually look like? Well, this is, again, a JavaScript package that includes some files, including a plugin.js file, where the main content of my plugin is located, a package.json file, which actually specifies some metadata about this plugin, such as who the author is, any additional information about it, a description of the plugin, and so on. And also, by default, it creates a blank README file and an empty test file for you to create some additional documentation and a testing harness if you would like to do that. So let's just take a look first at very quickly at the package.json file. It's easy enough to just go through it and fill in the areas of this that you would want to fill in, like provide it a name, give it a description, iterate the version number every so often, provide an author, and for every person that contributes, add them to the contributor section. And the rest of this is you can pretty much just leave as it is for now. There's one thing that's important to notice, that under the plugins section, there is a key called plugin, and this is matched to the name of the JavaScript file called plugin.js. So this is how Cloud9 knows when it reads this package.json file which of the JS files to actually load. If I create additional JS files or want to rename that JS file from plugin, I also have to change it in the package.json file. Any questions from the audience? No, the one person is following along with me so far. OK, so I actually have created a couple of plugins already, I think, in this workspace. So let's get rid of some of these. Add SDK1 and debug equals 2. Reload this workspace. And let's see if we have those plugins now. C9. Plugins. Here we go. We can see now in my C9 plugins of this one, we have plugin 1 and plugin 2. So we're going to just step up just increase the amount of difficulty in each of these plugins. But here, if I create a new plugin, I can add it to my favorites, and I'll just delete those from the underlying file system. Let's remove that. Now, if I open my first plugin, and open plugin.js, we can see here the underlying simple version of a plugin. Let me actually go back to this other workspace, because you can at least here see what a blank plugin actually looks like. So underneath the hood, this looks very similar to a technology called, I think it's require.js. Notice that this doesn't really look perhaps the same as some other JavaScript files that we might have seen. But instead, there's a couple of just basic lines that it actually has. All of this stuff is first interpreted by the IDE, but is not actually run until specified. And I'll tell you about when that actually means in just a moment. But notice that here, there's a main.consumes line in line 2. And this lists all of the plugins that this plugin is dependent on. So by default, we perhaps don't have to have any dependencies on other plugins. But when we actually need to depend on features supplied by other plugins in the IDE, we need to list those plugins in the main.consumes line. And then we need to link them to the code below, which I'll show you in just a moment about how we can do that. Main.provides gives a name to this plugin that other plugins could use in their consumes line. So in this case, my plugin is just set there by default, and we should change that to be applicable to our own plugin, as we'll see in just a moment. Now here in the function main, this function main is actually run and interpreted, but it doesn't actually do very much. It just gets everything set up, but it doesn't actually start the plugin despite what the name sounds like. That actually happens through a sequence of methods that are contained throughout this plugin. So if I scroll down, we can see that we have a lifecycle where on some event called load or some event called unload, some events actually happen. It's really in here where, as the plugin starts, that those methods are called. So let's be a little bit more concrete about this and look at an example. So here for plugin one, what we are basically going to do is to create a menu item called CS50 Seminar Dialogue 1, because we have two of them, and we're going to inject it into the window menu. And when we click on it, we're going to open up a dialogue that shows us some very basic information, in this case, just a hello world. So this is a very simple hello world dialogue that we can implement as a plugin in Cloud9. So let's see how this actually looks. We'll step through it relatively quickly so we can look at the next plugin as well. Notice that here we are consuming a variety of plugins. We're consuming the dialogue plugin, commands, menus, and UI. Looks like I actually am consuming dialogue twice, so I can remove that. And notice that the way that I'm connecting them, this is sort of metadata that's telling the plugin system what requirements are actually necessary for this plugin to load. It's also important to note that the order that plugins are loaded is not guaranteed. But what is guaranteed is that if I specify some plugin as a requirement, that plugin will be loaded before this one is loaded. So that means that if your plugin requires on some functionality provided by something else in the IDE, you should be sure that your plugin consumes that plugin so that the dependencies are certain to create your plugin or instantiate your plugin only after that, that existing framework exists. So here I have mention the metadata to the plugin manager, which ones I'm going to consume. And in the main function here, I'm going to then connect my code to those imported plugins. So I'm just going to create some variables that match the names of each of those so that I can very quickly reference them throughout my code. The reason that I'm importing dialogue is because I want my plugin to act as a dialogue plugin. And the way that I'm able to do that is to, of course, connect my code to the dialogue plugin by importing it, and then by specifying, by creating a new dialogue variable and connecting it to that imported plugin. And then by defining my plugin as a new dialogue. So in the initialization, I want to define my plugin, and this variable called plugin, you will see, is just used commonly throughout Cloud9 plugins. And I'm going to instantiate a new dialogue with some attributes, give it a specific name, say that it is possible for users to close it, that it'll show a little X in the upper right-hand corner or a little button in the lower right-hand corner, whether or not I can select text from it, what the title of that dialogue would be, and so on. Now this just defines the dialogue, but it doesn't yet show it. I actually have to define an action for it to be shown. And again, I encourage you to take a look at the Cloud9 SDK because there are a variety of dialogues and they are really well documented. You can see the different types that there are, and use them in whatever plugin you have in mind. Now there's going to be a load section, and this load function, as you recall, is used by the plugin lifecycle to actually instantiate everything and get everything ready to go. Now, when this plugin loads, I don't want it to immediately show a dialogue because this plugin will load along with the rest of the IDE. And when I load that IDE, I don't want the dialogue to show up automatically. I only want it to show when I click on the menu option in my window menu item that I will add to it momentarily. So there's two distinct steps here that have to happen. I have to create a command, and the command will be responsible for actually showing the dialogue on the Cloud9 IDE. And then I have to create a new window menu item that runs that command, so that when I click on that window menu item, that command is then run, and therefore my dialog is then shown. And so this is actually a pretty nice way of thinking about it, because first I can create a command whose name is cs50seminar-dialog1 that provides some general context for it. And the important bit here is to notice the exec attribute, which lists a function that will be called in my plugin when this command is run. So this command is sort of like it's just an arbitrary Cloud9 command that's available to any Cloud9 plugin. But the actual function that it's going to call when this command is run is the show dialog function in my plugin.js file. And we can actually see these plugins and the list of commands that are available to us in preferences. Scroll all the way down. Let's see, actually, do we see this now? Plugin manager. Oh, no, I think it's definitely around here somewhere. Well, there's a list of commands somewhere, but I must have, well, I've forgotten where it is. So, okay, we'll move on. All right, so we have a list of commands that are available to us, and those commands are these just arbitrary Cloud9 commands that run specific code. So just keep that in mind, that we're going to run the show dialog function momentarily. Now, when I actually want to add a menu item, I can add that item by path and just specify exactly where I want it to be, window/cs50seminar-dialog1. And at that point, I want to create a new item that is going to run a command, cs50seminar-dialog1. Notice that, again, this is the Cloud9 command that I've created just above. Now, I also want to create a little divider, and so I can do the same in the subsequent line. Now, you might notice that as part of defining this menu item, there's a number associated with it, which actually says where exactly I want that menu item to be located in the list of menus. But you might notice that I don't actually see any numbers with these menus by default. So there's a little hidden thing that we can do, a little change to our URL. So in addition to SDK equals 1 and debug equals 2, I'll set menu to 1. And hopefully it's menu, not menus. Oh, it's menus equals 1. Hold on. And what we will see upon reloading that IDE is that I still am in debug mode, but now there are numbers associated with all of the menus. And this tells you exactly what the number is when you are trying to inject something anywhere in this menu system. So in the window menu, I can see that item 45 is collaborate and item 38 before it is installer. So when I want to inject an item between those two, I would just select a number between those two items. So I selected 41 and inserted my seminar dialog 1 menu item at that location. And that's why this number that appears here is number 41. That is the location of that menu item in the Cloud9 menu. Now, similarly, I wanted to create a divider and add it so that there was a nice division between each of these menu items. So I added that at location 43. So far, so good, I hope. So now let's actually look at the specific code in show dialog that's actually responsible for opening this dialog window. Scrolling down, I see that I want to have this function show dialog, and it's extremely simple. I'm going to run the show method on the plugin variable. And remember that we defined this plugin variable above as a dialog. So var plugin, in this case, is this object that we've defined internally, and it is going to be a new dialog contained within this plugin. And so we actually reference this plugin variable many places in a typical Cloud9 development environment. We'll see it here. Notice that as we scroll down, there's additional lifecycle. So notice that these respond to events that are fired by this object, this dialog object. By default, there's load and unload, which are available to all Cloud9 plugins. But in the event of this dialog, there's another event that can fire as well called draw, which is fired when that is about to be drawn on screen at the first instance of the dialog showing. So when it is actually going to be shown, is going to provide to us some HTML, and using just standard HTML practices, can we inject some very simple information, our hello world, in a div in that dialog. So if we then scroll up we can see then the procession of things that it's occurring. First, we created a Cloud9 command that when executed by Cloud9 is going to fire this function. It's going to run this function called show dialog that I've written in my code. I created a menu item and attached to it that same command so that when that item is clicked in the menu, that command is then run and that function is then run. And inside of the function, I'm just going to call I'm just going to execute the show method of this plugin, which is going to first call the draw method and going to fire this this method down below, the draw event handler in our lifecycle, and then it will actually show the dialog. There's also a hide method so that if I need the opportunity to hide my dialog, I can do the same thing. So that's pretty much it to get all of this to work. Notice that if we scroll down further, there's a freeze public API. This basically just says that I want these methods to effectively be public but not overwritable outside of the context of this plugin. And below, at the very bottom, is perhaps the last thing that we really need to pay much attention to here, which is that we are going to register our plugin with the name C9Seminar1 and the object plugin, which, as you'll recall, is that plugin object that we've been defining throughout the entirety of this source code. And C9Seminar1 is the string that we promised to provide at the top of this definition. Okay, so let's ramp it up a little bit and see if we can do something a little bit more interesting. Now, this is only so great. I mean, it's actually pretty cool that in so few lines of code can we modify the existing IDE and add an existing menu item or add a new menu item, add a command and show a dialog and just a bunch of functionality that exists. It's really, really pretty great. But it doesn't do a lot because it can't yet communicate with the underlying Ubuntu instance. So let's say that I actually want to find out some information about the underlying Ubuntu instance, like the stats plugin does. So let's take a look at a little bit more information about how the stats plugin works. And in fact, it is very similar to this. You might recall that there's a dialog. You might recall that there's some information that's shown just along the menu bar along the top, which hopefully you're now getting a flavor of how we implemented this just by inserting menu items at specific points and by instantiating a dialog and displaying that dialog. But we haven't yet shown you how we can connect it to a command in the underlying Ubuntu instance. So let's take a look then at plugin 2, which does precisely this thing. I'm going to open plugin.js, which is the code for this. But under the window menu, if I click on dialog 2, we can see that it says this instead, hello CS50, which doesn't look all that enticing, right? Except watch this. Let me change something down here. I'm going to go to my workspace and change seminar to say something else like hello Dan. And I'm going to close it and save it. And now I'm going to rerun my dialog menu item. And notice that it has now changed what it says. Hello, Dan. I seem to have done something down here in the underlying Ubuntu instance without having manipulated any code that, again, is running solely on the client side. So there's obviously some sort of communication that's happening here. Now, this is where a lot of the power of the Cloud9 SDK comes in, is that in this plugin 2, we can actually cause a call to happen to the underlying instance and run some arbitrary command. So in this case, I have actually created a very simple bash script in my workspace called Seminar. So let me open that up. And we can see that it looks like this. It's just a very simple bash script whose sole purpose in life is going to be to echo out this text, hello Dan, or before it said hello CS50. And that's all it's going to do. Because this is now a command that I can run, I can actually run it down here. We can see that it actually is just a command that I've run naturally. I can ask my plugin to execute this command on the underlying workspace and parse the information that was returned from it and do something with it and modify my plugin and the behavior that I have in my plugin as a result. Okay, so let's see how this happens. We saw this very simple seminar bash script that I chmodded plus X so that it can actually run. And now let's see the modifications that are necessary to tie this together with the dialog window and run it. So here, we're going to do pretty much the same thing as we saw before, but notice that among the things that I have consumed now, in addition to the dialog, which again, I happen to have done twice, which isn't necessary, in addition to the dialog, and the commands and the menus plugins, which were necessary in the first one for me to define a new command and inject an item into the menus, I also have this proc plugin. And this proc plugin allows us to manipulate processes on the underlying instance. I've connected it after I've said that my plugin requires it. I've then connected it to code, as we saw in the main function. Again, I'm going to initialize my dialog. And if we move down now, we can see how this is different. The load function is the same, so it's just going to create a command and create a menu item and connect that menu item to that command. But if we now scroll down to show dialog, we can start to see where the differences arise. We have function show dialog, which is just going to show the dialog. But when I show this dialog, when the show method is called, it fires the draw function, and I am going to then specify some content inside of that. So I'm just going to create a div, provide to it some basic text, hello world. But notice that here I'm going to attach to it an ID. And the very next line, I am going to find that ID using JavaScript and store that object into another variable that I'm just going to call content. So now, whenever I have content, all I need to do is just modify this object's inner HTML, and the dialog HTML will then be modified as well. So when this plugin is then shown, which can happen, and this is a new event that is new to this plugin, but happens in every plugin with a dialog. When this is now shown, I'm going to call a function called fetchInfo, and this function is the meat of it here. I'm going to use that proc plugin that we described before, which, by the way, is really just a Node.js library that Cloud9 is using here. So you can actually look up about how this works if you go into the Node.js documentation and look up the exec file method for processes there. And I'm going to run this specific command, home Ubuntu workspace seminar, which is that same one, that same command that I created before, provide to it a current working directory just to be ultra safe in terms of the context of where this is running. And once that has then been completed and returned, I am going to run this function called parseOutput. Okay, so this then is going to execute a command on the local, or rather the remote Ubuntu instance. When I get back some information, I'm then going to call a separate function called parseOutput that has this signature here, error, standard out, standard error, and perform some computation on this. So if I received an error of some kind at all, I will actually check to see if error has some data. And if so, then I will modify the inner HTML of that content object, which, as you recall, we connected to the dialog at the instantiation of that dialog, or at the first drawing of that dialog. I'm going to just say that some error has happened. Now, this is overly simplistic. The error value will typically contain something that was useful, perhaps an error number and an error from the script itself. Or if the script wrote something to standard error, that data would be populated in that parameter as well. And I could be a little bit more careful about what error I'm actually showing people. But this simplistic example is good enough for now to at least see how all of this functions. Otherwise, if there was no error, then I'm just going to provide the raw output of that function into the inner HTML of this content element, and then update my plugin and show it here. And that's pretty much all that's necessary to get this to run. So let's think about then how this operates overall. When I first loaded this plugin, just like the first plugin, I'm going to add a command that's available to anything, to any plugin in Cloud9 called CS50 Seminar Dialog 2, whose responsibility will be to run this show dialog, which, as you recall, will actually show the dialog that I requested below. Then I will add that command into a window menu so that I have access to that. And when that dialog is requested to be shown, I will fetch some info from the underlying Ubuntu instance by using the exec file command. Once that is returned and I receive some information, then on the client side again, I will be able to parse the output of that command and update the inner HTML of the elements that we had connected to earlier. And with that, we then have this fully functional plugin that allows me to fetch information from this arbitrary script that we have created on our underlying instance. But again, it's really important and really key to separate out where each of these things is happening, that we have this all of this client-side code that is being run in the browser and doesn't yet have access to the underlying file system until we actually run some of these commands that are provided by the Cloud9 SDK, like proc and some other ones that allow us to read some data or read some files if we need to or do anything of the kind. Now, this is a somewhat simple example. There are other things that we would perhaps want to do as well. For example, perhaps we actually want to save some information to the preferences, or perhaps we want to add a new preference pane or something along those lines. Then that is something that you can take a look at the Cloud9 SDK to get more information on. This really is enough to get started. So just to be a little bit more concrete about the way that some of these things function, I did want to show just one more example, which is just some of the code from the Stats50 plugin. And this code is basically based on these examples, which you've actually seen, but has some more safeguards and has some more complexity in order to achieve some of the additional things that we want to achieve. For example, if I want to be able to save some settings, then I need to have access to the settings plugin. And every time I want to read some settings, I can, for example, attach to various events in the settings plugin. So every time the settings is read, for example, in my own plugin, if I am going to read some settings from the saved stored preferences of the user, then I can set defaults for a specific location for a specific preference in that JSON style options file that we've saved earlier, that we've seen earlier. And if I'm going to write some settings to it, then I can, or as soon as we detect that the settings have been written to, because, for example, those settings have been modified by the user either directly in their settings file or the preference pane has changed the settings file directly, then I can actually update some of the code or update the behavior of my plugin based on those changes that have occurred on the settings file as well. But really, the rest of it is pretty much this that you've already seen. We add some, perhaps something that's new is we add a preference file, or rather a preference pane to the preferences window, which again you can find out more information in the Cloud9 SDK README. But everything else is pretty similar to what we saw before, just with some additional error checking and some additional protections and some additional functionality to feature all of the various things that we've seen. If you haven't actually seen it yet, you might be wondering what the underlying command is in the Stats50 window to actually function. Well, it is, and move the mouse down here. Oh, damn it, so annoying. One second, hold on, okay. Let me move this up so we can actually see what happens when I type Stats50. Notice that in this case, the command that I am outputting is really, again, just a script that's going to output a bunch of information in JSON format. And the reason that we do it this way is that because we've written the client-side code in JavaScript, we can very easily just parse JavaScript objects and be able to manipulate those objects just like we would any other JavaScript object. And so this is a very convenient way of providing some information from the underlying Ubuntu instance, such as the version number, the host name, whether a server is listening, what the server is, so on and so forth, and parse that very easily and very quickly in the plugin that is then going to show us all of that information. So again, the key insight here to keep in mind is this separation between the underlying instance and also where the code is being loaded, that when I have a client, it's first loading just this static JavaScript file from somewhere, perhaps a CDN of some kind. We don't really have to care too much about this first step. But we just know that it is running on the client side, and that when I'm going to communicate with this Docker instance, that we're going to do so through the Cloud9 SDK. We don't actually have the ability using JavaScript or Node.js to write directly to it. We just use those existing SDK APIs to do that action for us. And again, one of the really important things is that when I have created this, plugin, and as I am working on it, one of the important things to do is to bring up the JavaScript console, because since this is all operating on the JavaScript on the client side, if I use a console.log method, so just to show an example here, let's try modifying this simple plugin to also log some data. And we'll add standard out. Whoops, let's change that to be right here. Now when I execute console log, keep in mind that since this is running on the client side, I will see this in my own JavaScript console, which is how I will then be able to try to troubleshoot and debug some of the problems that I have. Notice that because I am in SDK mode, I am then able to manipulate plugins on this instance. So even though it is saved on this instance, this is the one example of that previous rule being violated, where the Cloud9 SDK will actually pull plugins from the underlying instance and then run them, so that in this way I am then able to manipulate and construct some plugins here. But in order for me to see updates to this plugin, because it's on the client side, I need to save that plugin and then reload the entire workspace so that the new plugin is then downloaded onto my client, onto my web browser, and then is being used. So now when I click on this seminar dialogue 2, we still see this, but now hopefully in my JavaScript dialogue, should we see my... Oh wait, hold on, I might have to open the dialogue fresh. We should see my received data here. Received data, hello Dan, which as you recall was a console.log operation that we requested in the plugin. So this description then that I mentioned before, this dialogue that, or this diagram rather, that I mentioned before, is what happens, but there's an important exception only for development, which is that the plugin itself might actually be stored on the Docker instance temporarily, since presumably Cloud9 doesn't want us to be able to manipulate objects on their CDN. And the Cloud9 client, upon loading, will find those plugins in that .c9 plugin folder and load those, but those are still happening only on the client side. So then this is just an exception that occurs only for development of Cloud9 plugins, but the rest of the time, and the reason that we want to really hammer this home, is because most of the time this is going to be running from the CDN and just going to be run purely from the client side. Normally there will be no interaction with the plugin, or there doesn't even have to be any reason that the plugins themselves are actually stored on the underlying Docker instance, except in the case of this SDK development. So again, this changes just slightly because of the fact that we are running SDK mode. It's going to then load those plugins from development, and the sole purpose here is so that I can use Cloud9 to do development for Cloud9 plugins. But even so, this doesn't change, again, how any of this works. It's still being run entirely on the client side. It just means that whenever I want to create Cloud9 plugins in Cloud9, I create those plugins, put them in my .c9/plugins folder in my home directory, make sure I'm in SDK mode, reload the page every time I actually make changes to that plugin, and see what happens when in my JavaScript console, just manage my JavaScript console to make sure that any troubleshooting information that I place to console or anything else that might occur because of errors that I've written in my code or the like appears there. And with that, it's really enough to get started, I think, with the Cloud9 plugin, especially taking a look at the SDK documentation that Cloud9 provides. It's a great way to get started and very easily create some plugins for Cloud9. And with that, I want to thank you all very much for joining me. I hope you'll have fun writing plugins for Cloud9, perhaps improving plugins that we have now, or maybe even adding some functionality of your own. We look forward to seeing what it is you create. Until then, bye.